Good evening, good evening, good evening. How y'all doing? How y'all doing? How y'all doing? This is your host, AJ Jones. Welcome to the 107 Live Show. This is a good one. Please like, share, and subscribe to the 107 Live Show podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all other podcast platforms where it is available. You know, platforms like Jam, Podbean, Zencaster, a few other podcasting platforms. Also, RSS.com. And also, for questions and comments, send an email to the107liveshow@gmail.com with your name and location in the body with the comment or question. Yes, I am your host, AJ Jones. And I'm your host, AJ Jones. And this is the 107 Live Show. Now, let's get into it. We got a lot of information, got a good show. First, we're going to talk the NFL. We're going to talk about the success of the Baltimore Ravens this year, how all the circumstances. We're going to talk about the NFL playoff picture, and I'm also going to give my picks for the Super Bowl. We're also going to talk about the recent national championship playoff semifinals that just recently happened on New Year's. The game between Michigan and Bama and Texas and Washington that played out, that also ended up leading to the national championship that will be played this coming Monday between Michigan and Washington. This isn't the first time that they've met in a national championship setting. They met for a bowl game back in the 90s, and the national championship was actually shared between Washington. I want to say it was shared between Washington and Michigan. And college football in the 90s was huge. We had some serious legends coaching back then. Okay, so after talking about those two national championship finals, we're going to discuss a little bit of NBA ball. We're mostly going to talk about the rise of the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've been down for a few years, but this season they're a little bit different this year. They've won 8 of their last 10. They're averaging 122 points a game. We're going to talk about that. And after that, we're going to go beyond ball. And this is where culture, black culture in this particular space and moment is going to meet up with sport. And we're going to talk about let's just Lamar Jackson being who Lamar Jackson is. Okay? All right. And all the success he's having, but also all the negativity coming towards his way from the league and sports media as a whole. All right, let's get into it. So, the Baltimore Ravens have had probably one of the best seasons they've had ever. 13-3, and they're winning despite the early season injuries to key players like J.K. Dobbins and Mark Andrews. It's almost like they haven't skipped a beat. All right, and two key components to that in the passing game is the drafting of Zay Flowers, and then also the signing of Odell Beckham Jr. Those are two very, very, very important signings in that wide receiver room. That wide receiver room is probably one of the best in the league. And, you know, they're also rushing the ball really, really well. Zay Flowers, Odell Beckham Jr., Nelson Aguilar, those guys are really opening up the run game. Because guess what? Look, the Ravens have the best rushing attack in all of the NFL. And that's opening up the pass game. That's allowing Lamar to sit and throw the way that he needs to. And so, it's, you know, this is just a lot of really, really good football being played right now. And it's, you know, it is just a good thing to watch. You know, these last few seasons prior to this season, Lamar has been injured around this time of year. And this time, he looks good, man. He looks good. And the biggest thing that the media was really, really trying to push, the sports media was trying to push this narrative that you know, once Lamar got his money, that everything was just going to be everything, you know, they were just trying to push this narrative that Lamar was not going to be as productive after he got his money. And he's just proving people wrong. I mean, this is probably, you know, he's had some good numbers. He doesn't have that many interceptions. He's never really had a lot of interceptions anyway. But, you know, he's not pressured to rush for as much as he has in the past, which has also opened up, and that makes him a more dangerous weapon. You know, that makes him an even more dangerous weapon. You know, I mean, the way teams defended him the last 2 or 3 years is not the same way they're defending him now. Part of that is the weapons that he has on the outside. You know, the running back that is also shouldering most of the rushing load. And he's also able to rush when needed, and it's not even a big issue, you know. And that just opens up so much. That just opens up so much as far as it just opens up so much across the board. And let's talk about this Baltimore Ravens defense. This defense is literally built. This defense fits this team. If you got what Lamar and the offense are doing on the other side of the ball, and then this type of defense, you have two of the best linebackers, two of the best young linebackers in that defense, the best linebacker duo. And I came up in an era where, you know, most teams are running 3-4s and 4-3s, and this defense is a 4-2-5 base, and they're getting it. They are a 4-2-5 base. You know, they got the best corner. You got the best combination of safeties and corners on the back end. Then you got two of the best linebackers in the league. right now that are just playing phenomenal. And then you have a very deep and talented defensive line up front that's just getting after people. They literally made San Francisco made their own mistakes. Like, when people want to try to take credit away from that Ravens defense, but what do defenses do? Defenses make you make mistakes. Period. You cannot turn the ball over 4 or 5 times and then turn around and try to win a game. Now, statistically, if you look at the numbers, San Francisco got more yards. They probably moved the ball a little bit better. Kind of in a way. But the thing is, the Ravens made them make more mistakes. That is the thing. You cannot make mistakes against a defense like that. They did what they were supposed to do. They did it. Like, the defense did what they were supposed to do. They just beat the Dolphins. Like, it's, you know, I had never seen the Dolphins look the way that they look. Like, the Dolphins put 73 on the board earlier this year. And the Dolphins got decimated by the Ravens. And no disrespect to the Dolphins, they won. The Dolphins have won.
Come on, Emmanuel.
The Dolphins have won 11 games. The Dolphins are 11-5. You know what I'm saying? Like, the Dolphins are no slouches. That's what I'm getting at. Goodness gracious. 2 games in a row. Beat 2 of the best teams in the league. Alright? And goodness gracious, Lamar just playing out of his mind, you know? I mean, Lamar is throwing for 36-78, 24 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, with a QBR of 65.3. You know, QBR of 65.3. Lamar is, he's only 26. Like, he's in his prime. He'll be turning 27. He'll be turning 27 in a few days. Like, Lamar is, he's ahead of the game. Like I said, like, here's the crazy part about it. I saw part of the game and I saw highlights. The part of the Dolphins game that I missed, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Lamar threw for 3 people, went 18 of 21. So that means he only missed 3 passes. 18 of 21 for 321. He completed 85% of his passes, 5 touchdowns. And his biggest bomb, he threw for 75 yards. QBR, 95.9. With a rating of 158.3. I mean, he played out of his mind. And then, you know, he had a pretty, he threw for 250 plus against the Niners. And the thing that is shocking to me is how the sports media, you know, literally disrespected him the whole season. And he just put the league on notice after the 49ers game. He put the whole league on notice. 23 for 35, 252, two touchdowns, no picks. But he put them on notice. Now everybody's talking about him because he has the league's attention. He has the league's attention. Now, we're coming into the playoffs right now. And I think it's a good move that he's not playing this coming Sunday. And this will, I think this will give the Ravens more time to get healed, have them more time to get strategy together for whoever they're playing in the first round. But let's talk about pretty much the first, who's in first place as of today. As of today. All right. So, in the AFC, the East number one, the East number, at the top slot in the East, it will be the Miami Dolphins. In the West, you have the Kansas City Chiefs at 10-6. AFC North, the Baltimore Ravens at 13-3. And in the AFC South, you got the Jacksonville Jaguars at 9-7. All right. Now, in the NFC, in the East, it's kind of a tie between the Eagles and Cowboys. NFC West, you have top spot with the 49ers. NFC North, the Detroit Lions have the top spot. And in the NFC South, the Tampa Bay Bucks. All right. That's what it's looking like in the NFC and AFC playoff race. Now, one thing that was thrown out there prior to the Ravens-Niners game, leading up to that, they were saying this game could potentially be a preview for the Super Bowl. And this is probably the first time that this has ever been said. Like, okay, this could be a preview for the Super Bowl. Like, I understand the 49ers were playing really, really good at the time, but the Baltimore Ravens have, you know, the Baltimore Ravens have been playing good the whole year as well. And it was almost like the media tried to make it, a lot of sports media writers and commentators and analysts made it seem like the Baltimore Ravens were just coming out of nowhere. But if you look at their record, they're not coming out of nowhere. Like, they've been consistently this good the whole season. All right. And that's what is kind of shocking to people. And so I think the toughest game, okay, so let's just say if now everything as far as how the seeding is with the number ones and all of that, this is if I'm just going through the playoffs and everything as if everything was being played today. All right, now. Okay, so let's just say the Cowboy Eagles situation. The Cowboys and Eagles are both going to make it in. But the thing is, one of them is going to, they're probably both going to make it in. You know what I'm saying? Then you got the 49. But I think this is going to lead to either a Niners-Eagles matchup or a Niners-Cowboys matchup, which is good either way. But I think that if the Lions and Bucks have to play, I'm going to end up taking the Lions. All right. Then you have the winner of the... Okay, let's just say, I mean, it's a toss-up between those three for a lot of reasons. And I still don't trust the Cowboys. I don't trust the Cowboys right now at all. And I still don't trust the Cowboys right now. The Eagles, if they can get it together these last couple of games, and let's just say Eagles play the Niners again, and it's a hard one to call, but let's just say the Eagles get back to, let's just say the Eagles can play up to their full potential and beat the Niners. I mean, I can go either way with both of those teams. And so let's just say the Niners win, then it's Niners and the Lions again. Well, then it's the Niners and the Lions. And then if the Niners and Lions play, I believe the Niners can come out on top of the SEC. So we have the SEC champion. I mean, we have the NFC champion. All right, in the AFC, if everything was to play out today, I would have the Dolphins and Chiefs going head-to-head. And I have the Dolphins coming out on top. The Chiefs just have not been the team that they have been over the last few years, even though they pretty much have the same squad. But the only difference is the guy who ran the offense is in Washington. And Washington is slowly being built into a better team, just being honest. And then Ravens and Jacksonville get together and play again. I have the Ravens over Jacksonville. So this puts the Dolphins and the Ravens against each other again. And at the NFL level, it's hard to beat the same team twice, you know, because, you know, different things are going to be adjusted from the last time. And, you know, it'll probably be a tight game, but with this game, I actually would have the Ravens over the Dolphins again in the AFC Championship. And ultimately, this could be Ravens versus Niners. Could be. But like I said, I could go either way on the NFC side. Now, let's just say it's Eagles and Niners. And I'm mainly going with that. Let's just say the Eagles beat the Niners. All right. Eagles beat the Niners. The Eagles play the Lions. And the Eagles beat the Lions. Then it's an Eagles Ravens Super Bowl. Battle of the Birds, baby. Battle of the Birds. I love it. I love every bit of it. I'm all here for it. And so, you know, that would be my pick for the Super Bowl. The Eagles versus the Ravens. And what's unique to me, if it's an Eagles-Ravens Super Bowl, my question then becomes, who wins this game? Because these teams are very similar. If with a healthy Jalen Hurts, these teams are very, very, very similar. One, both quarterbacks can run really well. Both quarterbacks definitely can put in the air really well. Both quarterbacks have weapons on the outside, and both teams run the ball pretty well. Both teams have really, really good defenses. So, I actually believe, and that's another thing that nobody's talking about. Nobody, it's almost like nobody wants to see. Everybody's making a push to see Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey, but, you know, be in the Super Bowl against Lamar. But let's just say the Eagles, get everything turned around, flip the switch, and make it happen. And let's just say the Eagles make it back to the Super Bowl. Nobody really wants to talk about Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson playing each other in the Super Bowl. Nobody wants to talk about that. And that's a possibility that could very well happen, you know. But that's my Super Bowl pick. You know, it's either going to be the Niners and Ravens or the Eagles and Ravens. And it's mainly based on those two teams. Now, on the college football, we had two really, really good semifinals. And these are probably the two best competitive college semifinals that we've had since the playoff has begun. Well, starting next season, we'll be going to an 8-team playoff, which is actually needed. It's, you know, some people are talking 12, but I think the magic number is, 12 would be perfect, but the magic number is 8. Or I would actually say 10. I would say 8 or 10 could be both magic numbers, because it could actually work. The top two spots, if you're number one and number two, you know what I'm saying, you're pretty much waiting in the wings. You know, and everybody else, you know, everybody else playing to meet them. You know what I'm saying? So it's or even if you go 12, if you get slots 1 through 4, you're not playing nobody until the second round. You know what I'm saying? You get that bye. You know what I'm saying? So whether it's an 8. Whether it's an 8, whether it's a 10, whether it's a 12, I mean, it just works out perfect, to be honest. You know what I'm saying? It works out perfect. It works out perfect. Now, so Michigan played Alabama in a very, very close game. The first half, Michigan actually dominated Bama. The second half, Alabama dominated Michigan. But the last minute and so of the fourth quarter, Michigan made a push and tied the game up, and then came out in overtime, moved the ball down the field, and scored. Then, right after Michigan scores, Michigan did something that they forgot to do early in the second half, and that was trust Corum and give Corum the ball. All right. Corum punches it in overtime. Corum set it up, and they punch it in overtime. You know, and Jalen Milroe was trying to make some things happen and fumbled the ball And that ended the game for the Alabama Crimson Tide. And so Michigan won 27-20 in overtime. It was a really, really good game. One thing that kind of irritates me when people talk about these close games, people are saying, well, Bama shouldn't have been in. Bama shouldn't have been in the playoff in the first place. But we saw what happened to Florida State in their bowl. And let's not forget, Florida State, back in 1999, played in the national championship game where they were blown out. I mean, they were beaten by the Miami Hurricanes and still made it to the national championship, basically locking the Hurricanes out. But at the time, the media did not like the Miami Hurricanes, so they were glad to put Florida State over the Hurricanes. And this was during the computer formula age of the BCS. All right. Now, the reason why I can remember it happened my senior year of high school, freshman year of college. You know what I'm saying? Oklahoma ended up playing. Oklahoma ended up playing Florida State, Oklahoma ended up playing Virginia Tech, and Virginia Tech lost in the national championship to Oklahoma. And a lot of people to this very day were like, the Hurricanes should have been there. But they gave Florida State the nod over, yeah. And then we have the Texas and Washington game. Texas and Washington, Washington beat Texas 37-31. Washington beat Texas 37-31. And the game was, Michael Penix was otherworldly. Like, at the end of the first half, he had 200 yards back. At the end of the first half, Penix went 29-38 for 430 and 2 touchdowns. Now Quinn Ewers, he didn't play bad. He went 24-43 for 318 and a touchdown. The team rushed the ball pretty good. Washington also rushed the ball pretty good. Johnson rushed 21 times for 49 yards. He had 2 tutties. Penix went 3 rushes for 31. Rodgers went 5 rushes for 19, and Bernard had 1 rush for 4 yards. Texas did pretty good on the ground between Baxter, Blue, Ewers, and Murphy. That was well over 170 yards on the ground. You know, that they had three tutties on the ground between Baxter, Blue, and Murphy. You know, and I mean, both teams really, really threw the ball well, but I think Washington did a little bit better. Odunze, 6 catches for 125. Polk, 5 for 122. Westover, the tight end, had 6 rushes for 59. McMillan had 5 catches for 58. Bernard had 3 catches for 48. Johnson had 3 catches for 18. Washington did what they had to do. I mean, Washington had no problems moving the ball. I just think Texas was a little outmatched early. Between Westover, Polk, Odunze, and McMillan, like, you got 3 wide receivers and a tight end stretching the secondary like that. You can't defend you can't really just look at one guy and stop at one guy. You know, whoever's tagged, whoever's route is the main route. Like, if you cover that one guy, somebody else is going to come open for you. And Pennix is just tagging people downfield, just throwing darts and dots for everybody. Right? On the defensive side, for Washington, Trice had 4 tackles, 1 for loss, and 2 sacks. And Olof Voshio had 5 tackles, 2 for loss, and Hampton had 4 tackles, 2 for loss. It was just a good game that Washington, it was just a good game between Washington and Texas. A lot of people didn't think the game was going to play out the way that it was. You know, people thought that Texas was, I heard a lot of people saying most of these people were probably, most of these people, I'm not going to lie to you, were like Oklahoma or Big 12 fans. They were saying Texas was going to lock up, they were saying Texas is going to lock up Washington, and that is not what happened at all. And people were just over, people, because Washington won a lot of close games, I'm coming to the conclusion that Washington had teams that were just as, let's just say as a team, just as talented. You know what I'm saying? When you have a defense that's just as talented as their offense, you know what I'm saying? You know, so you're going to have some back and forth games, you know what I'm saying? But talent-wise, a lot of people just automatically assume that Oregon was way more talented than Washington, but when Oregon and Washington played, that game didn't play out like that. You know what I'm saying? It didn't play out like that. It's just something you really, really, really just have to look at. Like, that game did just play out like that. I just think, I think the other thing is, I think the other thing that is kind of playing out is the narrative that Pac-12 teams, aren't really that good, and that's not necessarily the case. That's not necessarily the case. Pac-12 is, I mean, let's just say from top to bottom, Pac-12 is not as balanced as an SEC or Big Ten. It's almost like the ACC. It's almost like, if you really think about it, the Pac-12 this year was kind of the way the ACC was in the 90s and early 2000s. If you want to talk about, like, competition-wise. Now, the ACC has mostly been dominated by either Florida State. It's been dominated by Clemson or Florida State. If you really sit and think about it, out of the ACC, who's won national championships since 2014? Since 2013, it's been Florida State and Clemson. And a lot of people tend to forget, you know, I mean, true enough, it's been about 10 years. 2013, 2014 national championship, you have Florida State and Auburn playing in the final BCS bowl game, and Florida State won it. Now, Florida State actually made it to the very first playoff game. Who did they play? Oregon. But Oregon ended up beating them, you know, with Marcus Mariota. And Marcus Mariota would succumb to the Ohio State Buckeyes, you know, and Cardale Jones and Zeke Elliott. That was setting the forefront for this, but every season after that, it has pretty much been Clemson. But now Florida State is slowly making it back to that prominence that they had early in the 2010s with Jameis Winston and those guys. But the national championship game is going to be good. Michigan versus Washington. It's going to be a tight one. It's going to be, offensively, you're going to have a physical team pounding the ball with Blake Corum. And then offensively, you're going to have a team slaying it all over the field. But they have a decent running back in Devin Johnson. So it's going to be a contrast of styles. Defenses, that Michigan defense is a little bit bigger, more physical and more balanced than Washington's defense. So I'm kind of leaning towards Michigan in the national championship. And I really don't watch a lot of Michigan games. But this will probably be one of the first where I'm like, just totally just, yeah, let's get it, Michigan. Let's go blue. All right. I think this is going to be a pretty good matchup between the Washington Huskies and the Michigan Wolverines. And I think it's going to make for a good game. I really do. All right. Now we're going to talk some NBA. All right. The Oklahoma City Thunder have probably had one of the best seasons they had probably since Russ, KD, and James Harden were all on the same team. They made it to the finals 2014-2015. And what was it, 2013-2014? Either way, it was 2014-2015. This is probably one of the best playoff runs. I mean, probably one of the best seasons leading to the playoff run since that team with all of those superstars on it. But now they have a young group of superstars with a new coach, well, different coach, that's not Scott Brooks. That's not Billy Donovan. This particular team is pretty good, man. They've won 8 of their last 10. They're putting up 122 points a game while only giving up 113. Now this is how you gotta look at this, right? They are putting up 9 points more than they give up on average. So 4.5 baskets. Let's just say 4 baskets and a free throw a game. You know, that's a solid give and take to me. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a maniac. He's scoring 31.4 a game, with his number 2 man scoring 18. And then you have Chet Holmgren leading the team in rebounds at 7.5. This team, they're moving the ball pretty well. They get out on the floor. They run pretty well. They play all – their defense is okay. But, like, they're consistently putting up 122. Like, the numbers that they're putting up this year have just been utterly amazing. You know, And when you're able to put up that amount of points, it's astonishing. Like, it's unbelievable, to be honest. You're playing some pretty good ball if you're able to just, I mean, the efficiency you have to put up those kind of numbers, it says a whole lot. Like, the efficiency you have to have, it's otherworldly. It is otherworldly. And then in the West out there, it's a very, very, you know, out there in the West, they're in the Northwest Division, but out there in the West, they're the number two team in the West. Let me give you a snippet of what they've done. All right. So they beat the Jazz. Okay, on the 11th, they beat the Jazz 134-120. They lost to the Kings 128-123. They beat the Nuggets 118-117. They beat the Grizzlies 116-97. They beat, goodness gracious, they pounded the Clippers 134-115. The loss to the Lakers 129-120. They beat the Mavericks 129-106. They beat the Knicks 129-120. They beat the Nuggets. They beat the Nuggets 119-193. They beat the Nets 124-108. They beat the Celtics 127-122. They just recently lost to the Hawks 141-138. The questions that I have, even in losing efforts, they're still putting up well within their average of 122.5. Like, this is unbelievable. Even within the averages, right? Just what they've done this year. Like, they've been down these last couple of years, but they're slowly coming up. Gilgeous Alexander has gotten better and better and better over time since he's been in Oklahoma City, and that's something that cannot really go overlooked. Like, you can't overlook that. It's hard to overshadow. Like, just to notice what's going on. The number one team in the league right now is the Minnesota Timberwolves at 24-9. At home, they're 14-2, and on the road, they're 10-7. They're 10-7 on the road, and they're handling their business. They're putting up 10 less points than the Thunder, but they're putting up 10 less points than the Thunder at 112.8. Well, let's just say 113, rounding up. And they're just killing it right now. All right. Now, in the East, Boston's on top. They're undefeated at home, 10-7 on the road. best team on the road right in the East is Philadelphia. Milwaukee is kind of, you know, on the fence on the road. You know, they're 16-3 at home, but they're 8-7 on the road. You know, they have trouble. They have a little bit of trouble on the road, but the just so happens that you would think Milwaukee would be the top scoring team in the league, but they're not. It's actually the Indiana Pacers, which is, you know, the Pacers are number five. They're 19-14. So, yeah, this is some pretty good ball going on right now. It's been a while since I've seen a. This has been a while since I've seen a competitive East. Like, the East and the West are very, very competitive right now. The Lakers are at the 10th spot. The Atlanta, like, if the playoffs were to happen today in the East, the eight spots are very, very competitive. You know what I'm saying? In the West, 9-10 would have to duke it out and win a couple of games to get to the eighth spot. I mean, if the playoffs were played today, it would be very, very good and very, very competitive. All right. And we're going to make a transition right quick. Just have some random thoughts before we get to the Beyond Ball segment. In the near future, we're going to be doing things on, going to be start the Patreon. We're also going to start the PayPal, Zelle, and Cash App. Just to keep bettering the channel. That's what the goal is right now. We're trying to advance the channel, eventually try to get some media credentials to go to, you know, go to a few games, to be on site at games, whether it be NBA, NFL, college, or even a fight or two, a boxing match or two. So that's what we're working on. On the other channel, the Chocolate Life podcast, we're starting to, you know, delve deep and just keep some other things going. Even on the 10-7 media multimedia group. Another channel is going to be opening up soon, the Chocolate State University podcast. It's basically an education and information podcast. Coming across a lot of information, mainly history stuff, civics, political literacy, things of that nature. So keep your eyes out for Chocolate State University podcast and also the Chocolate Life podcast. Yes, that's what we're working on here at 10-7 MMG. So now we're going to get to the Beyond Ball segment. Now, it is no question in my mind that the best player in the entire league is Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson has been so overlooked, it is not even funny. Okay? Is not even that. From the time, okay, Lamar went to Louisville. He said he just felt right in that offense. He felt right, you know, being coached by Bobby Petrino. And he won the Heisman his junior year. He won the Heisman. And he could have, he played one more year after the Heisman year. And, you know, they didn't want to give him the Heisman his last year at Louisville. He could have very easily won a second one, but they didn't want to give it to him for the second time. And so he decided he was going to go to the league. And that's when I noticed that a lot of times, a lot of these analysts, especially draft analysts, like Mel Kiper, especially when it gets to quarterbacks, Mel Kiper has, it's almost like Mel Kiper has a way of when a certain quarterback comes out, when they enter the draft and he does his draft analysis, Mel Kiper has a way of pushing certain quarterbacks in the league. And I'm going to be honest with you. Wilson in New York, and even Daniel Jones, Mitch Trubisky, those three quarterbacks, I never knew who they were. I'm going to be honest with you. And I'm a college football fan. Never knew who they were. And I just kept talking about, I just kept hearing Mel Kiper just, oh man, the deep ball that Mitch Trubisky throws up is just amazing. And the same thing with Daniel Jones, just talking about their deep ball. And I'm like, these dudes throw a lot of picks. But you're talking about their deep ball. And then, you know, I'm just trying to figure some stuff out. And Lamar, Bill Polian says Lamar should just change positions. And Lamar pretty much gave anybody who's thought that the finger with his play. Lamar honestly should have been the starter in Baltimore when he was drafted. Because Joe Flacco was so inconsistent, it wasn't even fun. And from day one, everybody was just looking at the whole situation as if, okay, it's only a matter of time before Lamar gets in. It's only a matter of time. But the question is, how long are they going to let it go on? They waited till practically the end of the season or the back half of the season to let Lamar come in. And what did Lamar do? Lamar led them to the playoffs. The very next season, Lamar started from day one, and what did he do? He won the freaking MVP. His second season in as the play guy. Now, Lamar is probably had one of the most best and consistent career stat-wise, you know, of anybody that's in the league right now. And I just find it funny that one, when negotiating deals, okay, one thing that Lamar has been so disrespected because Lamar is surprisingly smart, but for some crazy reason, people in the league office and people in sports media want to portray Lamar as something else. You got people talking about his style of play. You got people like, I actually, the year Lamar won the MVP, the year Lamar won the MVP, I was having a debate with a friend of mine. Now, this particular friend of mine, he's a basketball player that ended up playing football like mid-30s. He started playing ball, but he didn't play when I was in high school. When I was in school, I played in high school, college, played overseas. And he was trying to debate with here's how this broke down. Lamar ain't that good. Lamar should be a running back. No, Lamar should be a quarterback. I was like, I've been watching Lamar's highlights and I've been following him since he was in high school. I was like, I don't know what you're watching. I was like, I actually called my friend. And this guy's a friend of mine. I actually called him on it. On the debate, I'm like, when Johnny Manziel was winning games with his feet, you said not a word. When Tim Tebow was doing the same thing, you did not say a word. But a dude that looked like us, named Lamar Jackson, is winning games with his feet at the pro level. Nobody is, you know, you not saying nothing. You saying he should be a running back. Well, Danny, how the game is played? Well, the game has modernized. The read option is now a staple in college and pro. Well, read option is going to stay in the pro game. The read option is going to stay a staple in the college game. It is. It's going to stay. Now, on the pro level, it's only going to get. It's only going to add. See, here the thing is, with this read option, it's all about you. The quarterback has to be a run threat. Trevor Lawrence. If you get him a pretty healthy offensive line, and use him. Using that read option, whether it be the pistol or gun look, he's built for the future. Lamar Jackson's built for the future of this league. Patrick Mahomes is not as fast and as shifty as a Lamar or a Trevor Lawrence, but Patrick Mahomes could run the read option. Jalen Hurts, run the read option. I mean, Brock Purdy, he could run it, but it's the running back behind them that's probably going to take a lot of pressure off of them. But that's where the league is headed. Look at the quarterbacks. Quarterbacks are a lot more even the athletic quarterbacks from when I was playing ball. I played high school ball with a guy that was athletic and electric as Lamar. My quarterback was pretty much just like Lamar was in high school. 1,000 yards rushing, 1,000 yards passing, double-digit rushing touchdown, double-digit passing touchdown. And we went through the playoffs and won some championships. Like, now let's fast forward back to today. Lamar has been disrespected from pre-draft all the way up to now, he was being, okay, people were saying Lamar's the second, maybe third best quarterback behind Josh Allen. And then if you look at the stats, Lamar's stats were a little bit better. Lamar, they were talking about completion percentage. But look at what he's throwing. Look at what Josh Allen was throwing. Like, the percentage is not that, the percentage was, and I was just, I'm like, people are leaning on this stuff one way for one person and then propping it up on another person. And then people got mad at Lamar, but a lot of teams were getting mad at Lamar because he hired his mother as his agent. See, we live in a society where when you have people like black athletes, especially young black athletes, as soon as they get in a position to negotiate large sums of money, they end up hiring people that either hire people that don't look like them or know way more than them. And that person that knows way more than them can take advantage of them because they know nothing. I mean, true enough, you have the financial literacy seminar and all of that. Because one of the first things they do, hey, you need to hire an agent. But they don't get into specifics of why. And I remember, what was the guy's name? He was on... I Am Athlete. He was on one of the first episodes, and he was a financial literacy guy because they were talking about the broke episode. And I remember Tommy Harris was talking about, you know, talking to his agent, and his agent was like, yo, I know a guy. He was talking about everybody knows a guy. Everybody knows a guy. And that's true. And Lamar totally took the whole middle and the agent pretty much plays the middleman between the player and the team that they negotiate. And Lamar, a lot of the stuff that you could pull, a lot of stuff that these teams can say to agent, because the agent doesn't necessarily, the agent motives on the back end of, okay, I got to set myself up because with my percentage to make this, this, and this, because this is the type of player that could earn this type of money. Lamar hired his mother. Lamar's mother is his agent. So guess what? Lamar, she's going to make sure Lamar's best interests are in mind. Yo, ma, I want $250 million plus. With at least $120 million guaranteed. At least. And what did Lamar get this past offseason? Because a lot of teams, put it to it, there were two teams that were really going to be on Lamar if they went after him. But somehow, the league just kind of put something out there to basically keep people from pursuing Lamar. The two teams that actually want to try to go get them, but they couldn't afford them, was Carolina and Vegas, the Raiders and the Panthers. And at the end of the day, Lamar was like, hey, I've been playing this good. I want to be paid. Deshaun Watson ain't done what I've done. And he got $200 million. And it would have looked really, really bad on the Ravens had they not paid Lamar. Lamar kind of low-key forced their hand, to be honest. If we're going to be real, he forced their hand. And even with him being injured, he had the leverage to do so. How was that? He's got an MVP and won in his second year. He's been one of the best players in the league since he got to the league. And it's undeniable. And then you have sports media figures coming at him. This man has led his team to multiple playoff appearances. Multiple. And it's this whole season, up until the 49ers game, everybody was talking about Tariq Hill, Tua, Brock Purdy, and Patrick Mahomes as league MVP, and Josh Allen as MVP candidates. Nobody was really talking about Lamar. I'm just saying in general, as far as sports media was concerned. And I found that very, very alarming. But as the year came on, Christian McCaffrey, everybody was pushing this Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey narrative for MVP. Now, I will tell you straight up, I love Christian McCaffrey. He's probably hands down the best back in the league. But he does not change the game the way a Lamar Jackson changes the game. He is a game changer. And then he has a defense in Baltimore that backs him up. Point blank, period. If you don't believe me, look at the results of the 56-19 win over Miami, or the 33-19 win over the San Francisco 49ers, forcing Brock Purdy to throw four interceptions. Lamar Jackson pretty much, after the win against the Niners, he pretty much put the league on notice, like, oh, I'm not an MVP candidate. I'm not an MVP candidate. Y'all saw what my defense did to the other MVP candidate. And look at what I did. I ain't throw no picks. I threw for 250 plus, threw two touchdowns, didn't turn the ball over. But that's the MVP candidate y'all want to push. That's the one. That's the guy y'all want to push for MVP. Y'all not going to market me? Got you. I'm just going to keep winning. You got a whole league, and then the media in this particular sport for that league pushing the same narrative. And then you got women in sports media saying low-key racist stuff. Oh, I just don't like him. He's not, you know, quarterbacky. What she's saying is the quarterback she likes, the quarterbacks that she's always liked, look like her and can't run like him. Who is him? Lamar Jackson. We still live in a society, even when it comes to sports, people just think quarterbacks are just supposed to stand in the pocket and just throw the ball all day. Football is slowly getting away from that era. Slowly getting away from that era. Quarterbacks are beginning to run. More and more quarterbacks are beginning to run. And it's not just black quarterbacks. It's not. And it's been like that at least 10 years. I know 8 years ago, when I was, I want to say 6 to 8 years ago, when I was coaching high school football and working as a recruiter part-time, some of these dual threat quarterbacks are not just black, they're white as well. or other or were there other ethnicities as well? What is the league going to do when they get a white quarterback that runs the ball? Okay, what are they going to do when a white quarterback comes in the league and is playing like that? I'm telling you right now, there will be some rule changes, and this is going to back up Michael Vick's argument that he made when he was playing. Certain quarterbacks are going to get calls, and then other quarterbacks are going to get thrashed for those same type of calls. No, everybody was saying Michael Vick was just complaining. No, Michael Vick was right. If Peyton Manning can't run to save his life, Brett Favre could somewhat get around. But once he got old, he couldn't outrun a fart in the wind. But I just find it funny that players like Lamar Jackson have to deal with what they have to deal with, and all they have done is be consistent and when he's doing what he's supposed to. But yeah, pretty much this whole season, it's been Brock Purdy versus Lamar versus the league and the sports media, mainly football media and the sports media. But this is all that I have for today. Please like, share, and subscribe to the 107 Live Show podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all other podcast platforms where it is available. Please stay tuned for the Patreon. Please stay tuned for the Patreon. The Zelle, the Cash App, all of it. We're trying to put out some better content, put out more consistent content. Just to give you guys a heads up, today was more of an impromptu welcome to 2024 show. But in the near future, we will be casting our normal time starting next week, it will be Saturday evenings. It will be Saturday evenings at 9 p.m. Saturday evening at 7 p.m. From now on. We're also going to be doing some of our podcasting live, and we'll be streaming on Facebook and Twitch, and eventually we're going to be on TikTok and Instagram Live as well. We will probably be alternating back and forth between StreamYard and Recast. Those are the two platforms that we'll be back and forth on. So it's going to be a unique experience. The reason why we're going to be going back and forth between those two platforms is because just trying to find some things that just work all the way. We're just trying to find some things that just work all the way for us. Restream. We're just trying to find some things that work for us. On the channel, and just trying to make some more successful content. So that is all for now. I will see you next Saturday at 7 p.m. And next Saturday will be a live cast. So we may do it on Restream. We may be here, and also we'll still be from we'll be using our previous platform as well. This is AJ Jones, and peace.